From National Public Radio, this is Latino USA.
Tonight on the Money Program, we're going to look at money. Lots of it. Some of it in nice piles, others in lovely clanky bits of loose change.
Loose change. Money. Dinero. It can bring a smile to your face, and as they say, it does make the world go around. But for the families of millions of immigrants to the United States, remittances, the money they send to their home countries, is serious business.
Right now, I just send a little bit left because, you know, the job is slowed down. Every job is going slow now, everywhere. Everybody have problems.
This week on our program, the immigrant economy, remittances on the decline, and a conversation with the stars of the Broadway musical In the Heights, just nominated for a breakthrough 13 Tony Awards.
It's amazing that we're on Broadway, but it feels like home on Broadway. There's nothing like it.
Coming up on Latino USA, I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. Three Mexican police chiefs from border cities have requested political asylum in the United States. Here to discuss the news of the week, I'm joined by Latino USA's senior producer, Alex Avila. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Maria.
I have to say, when I first read about this, I kind of was scratching my head. I don't know how often it is that Mexican police officials are seeking political asylum in the United States. So what's the basis of their asylum request, and do you think it'll go through?
Well, yeah, it is an unusual situation. Actually, the basis of their request is basically the volatile nature of their positions as police officials in these regions where police are being targeted for death. Officials with Customs and Border Protection told the Associated Press that they've interviewed these police chiefs and that their cases are under review. They're entitled to an asylum hearing, and they're going to go through the process with them. And all this has to do, of course, with the drug-related violence that we're seeing in Mexico along the border regions. When President Felipe Calderon took office in December 2006, he sent thousands of soldiers and federal police to areas where the government had essentially lost control. And these cartels have reacted with this unprecedented violence, and police have been the target of much of these violence. These police chiefs sort of appeared. They didn't come as a group. They individually crossed. They felt that they were in danger, and they asked for political asylum, and it really remains to be seen whether it's going to be granted.
Has anything like this ever happened before? Have you had something, a similar kind of political asylum request?
There have been individual cases of these. Political asylum from Mexico is rare, but it does happen from time to time. We can see small cases on an individual basis. It's not a large-scale thing at all.
Let's move on to this story, Alex. Many Americans last week received notice about rebate checks, part of the economic stimulus package that was passed by Congress and signed by President Bush. But it seems, interestingly, that the anti-immigrant provisions written into this law could actually sting some people here. So clear this story up for us, Alex.
Well, the law as it was written, it requires that you have a Social Security number in order to be eligible to receive your economic stimulus, your tax rebate. A lot of the anti-immigrant groups like FAIR lobbied for this because they were worried. They didn't want the possibility of undocumented immigrants to get access to these tax rebates. So if you were married to somebody without a Social Security number and you filed jointly, millions of people did and hundreds of thousands of our military personnel did, then you're not entitled to these rebates. A lot of the people that are affected are, in fact, legal residents with their green cards. They have an IRS-issued taxpayer identification number instead of a Social Security number. And, in fact, many of the people are in the pipeline for citizenship. But as you know, there is a backlog for citizenship. And so even groups like FAIR said this was an unintended consequence of trying to target undocumented immigrants.
Yeah, well, has FAIR at all said that they apologize for this or that they made a mistake in this?
Yeah, they've come out and said, you know, that if you're married to a U.S. citizen or if you're married to a military, that these non-citizens should be entitled, and, you know, and they're calling for maybe changes in the law, but it really is too late at this point. The law is just not written very well.
All right, Alex, let's talk a little bit about Arizona. We've mentioned the sheriff there. His name is Joe Arpaio. He's been on this crusade that we've talked about, basically in the Phoenix area, to hunt down what he calls illegal aliens. Governor Janet Napolitano from Arizona is not renewing the state funding for the sheriff's controversial immigration sweeps. The sheriff is saying that this is all about dirty politics. Is it, Alex?
Well, if it's immigration related these days, I mean, politics are involved. The sheriff had a contract with the state of Arizona to do these immigration enforcement sweeps. And Sheriff Arpaio basically created a posse to go out and round up illegal immigrants, as he called them. One of the criticisms of Arpaio is that on his desk, he's left literally thousands of unserved felony notices. And the criticism is he's out there chasing illegal immigrants instead of serving these warrants for felony arrests. What Governor Napolitano is doing is she's creating a multi-agency task force to focus on violent repeat criminals with felony warrants. So you can see there's this overlap. He's being criticized for not going strongly enough after felony offenders, and she's creating a task force to go after felony offenders. And to help fund that, she's pulling the plug on the money that would normally go to the sheriff's department for this controversial immigration raid. So that's where they're talking about dirty politics. And then one thing to remember, Maria, is Sheriff Arpaio's a Republican. He's sort of become a hero of the anti-immigrant crowd in Arizona. Janet Napolitano's a Democrat. You know, she'll be up for re-election soon, so we may not have heard the end of this.
All right, Alex. Well, thanks for joining us.
Okay, Maria. Thanks.
Alex Avila is senior producer of NPR's Latino USA. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Imagine that you're the breadwinner of a large extended family. Imagine that your paycheck is crucial to their well-being. Sounds familiar, right? But now imagine that your family doesn't live with you, that you're a stranger in a strange land, and that your family is back in Mexico or Nicaragua or Colombia.
My name is Oswaldo Urbina, and I live in San Francisco. I send money to Nicaragua like every 2 weeks, $300, $400 a week, every 2 weeks. It goes to my wife and my daughter.
Okay, my name is Jose Olivares. I'm from Guadalajara, Jalisco. Now I live in North Lake. I send money back. No, for now. Not so often, but something two or three times a year. For now, the economy is, the economy is a little low. It's bad. But still, for me, it's remained the same salary. It's not affecting too much, but a lot of people is affecting.
Mi nombre es Luz Blanco. Soy dominicana. Vivo aquí en Nueva York, en Queens, en Corona.
My name is Luz Blanco, and I'm Dominican. I live in Queens and work as a cashier in an agency for money transfer. I would say that compared to years past, people are sending less money home, both in the amount they send and not as often. People that used to send money every week now send it every 2 weeks, and it's always less money. I also get a lot of complaints that it's more expensive now to send money. The company's costs have gone up, so we charge more. They still send because they have family that depends on them, but everything from food to transportation is up. The salaries are the same.
Pero realmente están limitados porque ha subido la comida, ha subido el transporte, y los sueldos siguen iguales.
Remittances, the money sent by immigrants in the United States to their home countries, are a lifeline for millions of families in Latin America. A total of $45 billion was remitted to the region in 2006, nearly equal to the combined gross domestic product of Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua. For years, the Inter-American Development Bank has been tracking remittances to Latin America, with the help of pollster Sergio Bendixson, who joins us now from Florida. Welcome back to our program, Sergio.
Thank you very much, Maria. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so for years, the amount of money being sent to Latin America essentially seemed to be increasing exponentially. You know, a few years ago, we'd be here and we'd be saying that it was $20 billion and we'd be amazed. Now, all of a sudden, it's skyrocketed to $45 billion. And some had even predicted that maybe $100 billion in the future. But now there's a sudden decline. What's happening, Sergio?
That's right. The so-called river of gold is beginning to experience some trouble. It may actually turn out to be an ocean of tears for millions of families in Latin America that will no longer be receiving remittances. And what has happened is that two very important dynamics have combined in the United States to cause, for the first time in history, a decrease in the amount of money being sent to Mexico and other countries. Number one, obviously the economic downturn in the United States has made the economic situation of many of these immigrant families more difficult. But more importantly, our studies indicate that we now have a fear factor, that millions and millions of Latin American families in the United States feel apprehensive about their future. They don't know whether they're going to be welcome in the United States in the long-term future. They're concerned about whether they're going to be able to remain in their apartment. They're concerned about whether they'll be able to find work. They're concerned about the way they're being treated by people. They complain about discrimination, being treated without respect. I think that has resulted in many of these families who don't know what's going to happen to them in the near future, basically saying, well, I maybe should hang on to my money this month and I won't be able to help my family back in Latin America because I may very well need it over the next few months.
So just how dependent are Latin Americans on the money that's being sent from the north to the south?
We estimate that at the very least 20 million people in Mexico, for example, are dependent on remittances and that at least 4 or 5 million of them will not be receiving remittances this year. And many of them will fall below the poverty line, which means they will not be able to afford three meals a day. They may not be able to afford the basic necessities of life, like housing and medicine. And therefore, it is a very, very difficult situation for millions of families in countries like Mexico. But in other countries, like the Dominican Republic, even Honduras and El Salvador, a lessening of the remittances can have an extremely negative impact on the economy of their countries. In many of these smaller countries in the Caribbean and Central America, their GDPs depend, their economic future depend on a steady flow of remittances from the United States and maybe even Europe. And if those quantities of dollars decrease substantially, it could have a catastrophic effect on their national economies.
Well, I'm sure, Sergio, that there are many people who are listening who are thinking, okay, well, this is an interesting story. It could be bad for economies, you know, in Central America or the Caribbean. But they're probably saying, what does this have to do with me and why should I care? And does it have any impact on me here in the United States if I'm not tied to the immigrant community at all? So what's the answer?
Well, I think we are all tied to the immigrant community in the United States, whether we know it or not or whether we like to admit it to ourselves or not. I think the most important trend that we may be identifying with this is that if Latin American immigrants stop sending remittances to their families, it is their first step in terms of a potential exodus from the United States. I think that if we see over the next few years millions and millions of Latin Americans deciding to go home instead of continuing to stay in the United States and work, it will have a catastrophic impact on the American economy. And I think that is something that, it goes without saying, would impact on the quality of life of all Americans.
Although, of course, there are people who say that the economic catastrophe that we're facing now is, in some people's view, being created by the presence of undocumented immigrants. And you would say,
well, I think that point of view does not fit in well with reality. I think if you were to remove the 20 million Latin American immigrants that are today in the United States, again, agriculture, construction, the service industry, the hotels, the restaurants, much of the tourism industry in the United States would go belly up, and no one can argue that that would have a very negative impact on the American economy. Most people do not like to think of it that way, but that's the reality.
Well, thanks for that information, Sergio.
Very good, Maria. Thank you again for inviting me to your program.
Sergio Bendixson is president of Bendixson and Associates, a multilingual, multi-ethnic research group based in Florida. So, how are Mexicans being affected by the decline in remittances? In 2006, Mexican immigrants in the United States sent $23 billion home, and the potential loss of that income could spell trouble for their own economy. Contributor Monica Lopez sent us this story from Mexico City on how that country is dealing with the possibility of remittances going down.
Mexico City is the center of government and commerce for the nation of Mexico. The sprawling capital is home to over 19 million people, and for all the wealth in the city, the majority of its residents struggle to stay out of poverty. For many of them, extra money sent by relatives living in the United States is the only way to make ends meet. Antonio Rosales Medina works as a security guard at a bookstore. He says even the worst salary in the U.S. is better than what can be made in Mexico.
Pero a comparación de cómo vivimos aquí, no.
You can't compare the United States to how we live here in Mexico, because who can live on a minimum wage here? Nobody. That's why people migrate to the United States.
Por eso emigra la gente a Estados Unidos.
And Mexican families are not the only ones that have benefited from remittances. The government, too, has also benefited from increased taxes and a more stable economy. At a recent conference on remittances, Rosa Marquez, a member of the Secretariat for Rural Development and Community Equity, spoke of the importance of the money sent home by migrants.
Durante los últimos años, y el Distrito Federal es de las entidades que reciben más de mil millones de dólares anuales por este concepto.
During the past few years, the federal district estimates that it has received billions of dollars annually in this form. In the past year, $1.5 billion were received. This is why it's important to jointly look for strategies that will allow us to capitalize on these resources and to find just conditions for migrant workers to send money to their families.
Para los trabajadores migratorios, para que envíen su dinero a sus familias.
But some immigrant activists say that the government has become overly dependent on remittances. Marta Sanchez Soler is the founder of the immigrant advocacy group Movimiento Mesoamericano.
We call them diezmos. Diezmos in Spanish means the 10% that churches ask to their people. In old times, you had to pay your diezmo or you'd be excommunicated. Most migrants send at least 10% of their hard-earned money home. And that money has not only kept families eating, but has also contained social protest in Mexico. And that's why governments are so for remittances. They want the money here. Otherwise, people would go hungry and people would protest.
Sanchez says the government has tried to make structural changes in the economy. But the prescriptions of global lending institutions, calling for increased privatization and foreign investment, have only worsened poverty levels and inequality. And now that remittances are dropping, with raids and deportations increasing in the United States, Sanchez says it's only going to make the situation worse in Mexico.
The ones that have been deported, the families were supported by the money that they were sending. Now they come and they don't not only don't send money, but they eat also. And so it's one more expense in the household. It's generating a lot of stress in families because the men come back or the women come back, but they don't find work. So it's just one more mouth to feed, as they say.
A recent survey by the Inter-American Development Bank projects a further decrease in remittances. The Mexican government says it supports transnational community efforts to lower the cost of wiring money home as a way to counter the drop. In the meantime, Mexicans and their families will be forced to find other solutions to make ends meet. For Latino USA, I'm Monica Lopez in Mexico City.
In a minute, from the barrio to Broadway, the multi-ethnic musical extravaganza called In the Heights, just nominated for the most Tony Awards this season. That's coming up on Latino USA. No se vayan. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Last summer, In the Heights, the musical story of life in New York's Washington Heights Dominican neighborhood, had yet to debut on Broadway when I spoke with its creator and star, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Essentially, it's a love story, but it's also a story about immigration, moving and going and coming, dreams, borders being crossed, gentrification. You know, you really wanted to cover a lot of territory because this is the Latino reality in New York now.
I think at the end of the day, the best musicals are really about very simple things, and I think our musical strives to be about home. But it's not Wizard of Oz, there's no place like home. I think it's complicated because some people are running away from home and some people are looking for it.
The new home for In the Heights is now on the Great White Way on Broadway. And just this week, it was announced that Lin-Manuel Miranda's high-energy portrayal of Latino life in the city was nominated for a breakthrough 13 Tony Awards, the most for this season. Joining me on Latino USA again is Lin-Manuel Miranda, the driving force behind In the Heights, nominated for Best Actor in a Musical, and his co-star Olga Meredith, who plays Abuela Claudia. She's nominated as Best Feature Actress in a Musical. Welcome to Latino USA.
Thank you.
What's it like? I mean, Lin, now you really are on Broadway.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, it's quite a head trip. I mean, it's amazing that we're on Broadway, but it feels like home on Broadway because it's such a big show. And I think and all of my favorite musicals are big Broadway musicals: Fiddler on the Roof, Chorus Line, and West Side Story. So it feels amazing. To be honest, when you see the quotes from the critics up on our marquee and those pictures, There's nothing like it.
Olga, you have been around a little bit longer than Lin.
A little bit.
And we had you on the show when you were starring in Mamma Mia.
Right.
So Broadway is not new to you. But when you think about the fact that you're working on a show that was written by literally this kid, you know, I mean, he was, I just love that. I mean, you are.
Well, he's an old soul. He's a kid, but he's got an old soul. It's been very infectious because Lin has so much energy and all these kids. So it's really affected me in a positive way. And it's been a wonderful experience for me, really.
Can I say that I just feel the same? I feel like Olga's the one with the youthful energy and I'm getting it from her. Sometimes I get up on the stage and I feel 85 years old. And then Olga comes bouncing up on stage because she does this sort of Tai Chi thing before she gets up there.
Qigong.
And she's kind of bouncing around. She's the one who fills me with youthful energy.
Oh, so I feel that's like nice.
When you think about the fact that this play, it has a great appeal to Latino audiences who kind of get it because of the music, because of the language. But you think about the audience that is beyond Latino, immigrants, New Yorkers. Why has it taken, why has this play caught on so much?
Because it transcends the Latino family. It's about family and community and home. And everybody has that. I mean, when I leave the stage door, I have people from Iowa and Kansas and Canada and different countries, coming up to me and saying, we love the show. And you reminded me of my grandmother and it reminded me of my family. So it's not just a Latino story. It is a Latino story, but it can be any family.
Yeah. The Latino story is the latest chapter in the American experience, in the American dream of, we get here,
right.
We do the jobs no one's willing to do so that our kids can do better than we did. And I think everyone in this country has come here from somewhere. And so, we had I saw the show once. We had my understudy on so I could take notes during previews. And there was a 70-year-old Jewish lady behind me saying, I lived in Washington Heights when it was all Jewish, and that's exactly what it was like. And responded to the story, and it didn't matter that she wasn't Latino. And,
right.
And she got the Spanish, even if she didn't literally understand what it was, she got the gist, and it spoke to her because it reminded her of that struggle.
I'm just wondering, when you talk about the Latino experience being kind of the latest chapter in our American history, and suddenly I just found myself writing down backlash, because I'm wondering, there is an anti-immigrant sentiment out there. There is an anti-Latino sentiment out there.
Absolutely.
something's going on for you. I mean, what? Go ahead, tell
me.
Yeah, well,
no, I mean, it's and you know, there's actually a line Sonny has in the show that we added between Off Broadway and Broadway. Sonny gets in 96,000 gets asked what he would do if he had $96,000, and he says, "The rents are escalating. The rich are penetrating. We pay our corporations when we should be demonstrating. What about immigration? Politicians be hating. Racism in this nation's gone from latent to blatant." And one of the things that I love about that is Sonny in that song is the only one who doesn't talk about himself. He doesn't talk about buying a house. He doesn't talk about getting away.
Right.
He talks about uplifting his community. But because he's a kid, they go, "You are so cute." And everyone laughs and you keep going. So we get our political point in and we get to, you know, laugh about it too, because hope has been relegated to youth. And you know, I think it's great that in this climate where there is anti-immigration sentiment, this show is a reminder that we're people and that we are humans and that we have just as much a right to be here.
What does it do to you, Olga, to know that, you know, people are leaving the show incredibly hopeful about our future? Just seeing you guys on Broadway is a hopeful thing.
I love it, and I think it's very necessary in these times that we're living, in these economic times and these political times and these corporate times. People need hope right now, and if we can give that to them in our own way, then you know, we've accomplished something, I think.
Lynn, for you, hope?
It's very gratifying because I know, as someone who's seen a lot of musicals, it's not easily won. If it's too sentimental or it's too cheesy, you just feel like, oh, well, that was a nice musical. It has to be, you know, I love Frank Capra movies, and Tommy Kail, our director, loves Frank Capra movies. And, you know, that end of It's a Wonderful Life is that much sweeter because you see how hard this guy's life has been and how many regrets he carries with him. And then we actually quote It's a Wonderful Life at the end of the show. At one point when, you know, I don't want to give it away, but Usnavi has this sort of epiphany. And at one point he goes, "It's a wonderful life that I've known. Merry Christmas, you old building alone. I'm home." It's our little Capra reference because for it to really be uplifting, you have to earn it. You have to go through it. And that's what we've tried to do.
Thank you both so much for your work, for your commitment to the arts, to creation, to creativity, and to the show. It's just amazing.
Thank you for
having
us.
It's a pleasure, Maria. Thank you.
Lin-Manuel Miranda and Olga Meredith. You can see them both on In the Heights. It's at the Richard Rogers Theater in New York City. More information can be found at intheheightsthemusical.com. Gracias.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Latino USA was produced this week by Benjamin Jacob, Angela Maldonado, Alex Avila, and Walter Morgan. Our executive producer is Sean Collins. We had help this week from Shannon Novak in Miami and Paul Franklin at KUHF in Houston. To listen to our podcasts, go to latinousa.org or look for us on iTunes. Our listener comment line is 800-535-5533. Our email is lusa@npr.org. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication, on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. The American Psychiatric Association, physicians working to help people maintain healthy minds and live healthy lives. Real stories at healthyminds.org. And Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring. Catalog at 1-800-FLOORING. This is NPR, National Public Radio.